We speak to you in the name of God the Creator, Jesus his beloved child, and the Holy Spirit, whose movement opens our hearts. Amen. Please be seated. I would like to welcome Kimberly, who is sharing in this reflection with me, and I invite you, for those who do not know you yet, to introduce yourself.
Well, thank you. Osio, Dawa Dawa Kimberly, Wahia Chini Yahweh, Shalagi Yela Udo Plasa. Hello, my name is Kimberly, and I'm Wolf Clan from the Cherokee Nation in Taupo.
On this occasion of the beginning of Stewardship Month, and on this occasion of All Saints Day, and All Souls Day, rather, we're going to begin from All Souls by recognizing that there are many ways within Christianity for understanding both death and what is beyond death. What is the future for all souls? There's room for a diversity of understandings, and we are not all required to believe the same thing about death and what is to come. You will hear a range of approaches today, with the assurance and even the expectation that you will take this up and make up your own mind about it. I would like to begin from an understanding of death that came to our collective attention most recently on the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation. As you're aware, there were graves uncovered. There are now 7,000 of those graves. And at the Parliament Hill gathering, one of the Indigenous leaders spoke to us about the spirits of the children as restless spirits. He then asked their spirits to lead the gathered people in a spirit walk that would bring them at last to a peaceful rest. I've been thinking about that ever since. It's a different understanding from what I have heard before, and maybe from what you have heard about what happens at death and after death. But as I've thought about it, I've found that it is not at all incompatible with the range of our Christian understandings of all souls and the life to come. And I've asked Kimberly to help us to understand this Indigenous perspective.
First, I will speak from being a Cherokee. I have a father that's full-blood Cherokee and a mom that's European, Scotch, Irish. But I was raised with my Cherokee grandparents early on until we moved back to where I call them my European side. But I was raised in the understanding that death, although sad, but it was just this physical body, but it was you were going from this world to a more spiritual world. And so it was passing. It was never like death that was the end. It was never taught to me. In fact, at one of my early relatives, I believe it was my grandmother, because I was quite young, I remember my aunties taking me away from the actual ceremony and not allowing me to cry. And at first that seems, not nice, but it was because it wasn't an occasion of necessarily crying in like the end. And also in my Cherokee culture, there are spirits there, and there's ceremony to pass that from one world to the other. And so the spirits can sometimes attach, and they can take other forms, or not maybe be a trickster. So to protect the children, they could mark with charcoal or to keep us away from them, because we didn't need to be that close to what was happening. And that was how I was raised in that aspect. And of course, I know in some Ojibwe First Nations, because there's many First Nations and there's many different views on that. on Turtle Island, there's just many, but there are some similarities. Like, there are some that say the Creator has a stick and has your entire life on it. And you don't know that, but when it's your time, when it's time to pass over into that other realm or that other world, then that's it, and the Creator knows that. And then, of course, you have Inuit cultures that they believe in reincarnation, and that a relative is born again in that newborn child or in that child. And so you might have a mom, and you treat that child is named after that person, and that person is looked at as the actual mom. So if they tell you to do something, you do it, you look at them as the mom, because they're living again. So there are several different views. And also in some other First Nations, it's about passing over into that spirit world, and it's happy hunting. That's what you're doing. You're living another kind of life. And also, as a Cherokee, I always thought my ancestors, and I was taught my ancestors were there with me. They could be. And that I was to imagine behind me, supporting me, all my ancestors were there, were needed. And they could be, or they could express themselves in a spirit animal. So I was taught that, I guess, the distinguishment between this life and the next was not so far apart.
So I want to invite you to create a space in your own understanding to hear this truth that Kimberly has shared alongside the other ways that we speak about the future of all souls and the spectrum of Christian theology. And I'd like to give a little bit of background about how we've come to the language that we have. As you're aware, Christianity grew out of Judaism. Jesus was a good Jew. And the Judaism of the time of Jesus spoke of the life to come as Sheol. And it was a place of rest. It wasn't how we think of heaven or hell or anything like that. In fact, what happened in that time period was that in the Roman Empire and in that time of being at a center of places of trade, many different beliefs circulated. And some think that it was the language of the religion of Babylon to speak about paradise and torment, a religion that's come down to us in the modern times as Zoroastrianism. And that this is one of the sources where Christianity came to speak of heaven and hell. And that became a fully developed theology over the hundreds of years of Christianity. And because people can't stand to be in the binary of yes and no, and wanted there to be gray zones, insisted that it's not always clear, the language of purgatory developed as an intermediate place, because we can't just live with yes or no. And that became the accepted beliefs through the centuries. And then when we came to the time of the Enlightenment, there came to be a critique of religion in general. And it was beyond that, it was actually Karl Marx who said that when you talk about the reward of heaven, this actually is very advantageous to class interests, because the reward of heaven is a great justification for people being exploited in this life. Don't worry, you'll get a better life in the next life, so put up with your circumstances and don't have a revolution. The phrase that you might remember from that language of Marx was that religion is the opiate of the people. So that in fact, what happened out of that was a movement towards atheism, because if religion is an opiate, well, what do we need it for? And atheism had this perspective that in that case, there is nothing after this life. There's nothing knowable about it, and this life is it. Now, Christianity doesn't live in a vacuum, and so we've actually come down to probably three broad strands of how people think today. First is the traditional binary of heaven and hell. It's an approach commonly held in fundamentalist churches, but if you scratch the surface of any Christian community, you will find people who wonder about heaven and have they been good enough. They wonder about punishment, they wonder about judgment, and it's not necessarily articulated all the time, but there is a bit of an anxiety about, have I been good enough? There's a second version, which is actually very well known among us, which has a soft pedaling on the idea of judgment at all. And so, for example, our funeral liturgies don't mostly focus on heaven and hell and what are consequences of this life. In fact, they lean more towards the infinity of God's love, that in the end, God will reject no one, God will embrace everyone. There's a third version. It's called Lights Out Christianity. And it picks up from this critique of the Enlightenment and Karl Marx, and says that this life is all there is. When you're done, you don't switch off the lights, that's the end. And what that does then is focus on living this life as best we can. And even though there are phrases in the creeds about, I believe in the resurrection from the dead, it's treated as metaphorical, just like some other passages are treated as metaphor. And so for a person who is a lights-out Christian, it's all about the present. I think that over the course of my life, I've lived in all three of those worlds. I've lived in the very real sense of there's a heaven and a hell. I've lived in the sense of let's not talk about judgment. And I've lived in the this is all there is. And I think that you can do any of those and be a part of this community. I find that my preference is to not particularly think about it as heaven and hell is my motivator for my actions. And maybe you find yourself in one of those descriptions as I've mentioned them. I know my mother is solidly in the first one, and she is convinced that she is going to heaven and it's all worked out. And in fact, she's in a hurry to go there because she's done everything she needs to do. And I hear this when we go for our monthly drive. And maybe you have some conversations in your life like that. But you know that the deaths of these children, the uncovering of these graves, really gave me a pause about this. Because if you go with the language of the Enlightenment and Marx and lights out Christians, children are dead and they have nothing. But their life was crap and they had nothing in that either. They lose both ways. And I have a hard time with a world without hope. And so I really look to Kimberly sharing this wisdom from the Indigenous teachings to help us in this time to speak about hope. And I'll ask you to say a bit more.
Okay. Just remember that these over 7,000 children that were discovered and taken before their time when they were removed, in indigenous cultures, there were many ceremonies that in passages of, your passages into your growing, smudging and your bundles and all these ceremonies that were part of you growing up to become a good elder, to become that good ancestor. So imagine being cut short. And they would be restless. And so that is why, as they are discovered, there is ceremonies that have to be done in that spiritual way, to have them not be restless so they can pass on, so they can go on, because they were cut short and not allowed to be the ancestors that they should have been. They were not allowed to be a part of their culture and their First Nation. So that is, in a sense, discovering these bodies, because they weren't lost. Every First Nation on Turtle Island knew where the bodies were. But discovering them and having them be in that restless state, it's now has to have ceremony, which is also encouraging, because now they can pass on and they can be part of the ancestral. And so I guess part of the hope of my, I was raised with the grandparents and ancestors that went through many atrocities and residential schools as well. And I saw that growing up, how that caused the intergenerational trauma and all of those kinds of things. So part of my reconciliation and my truth and my journey and through everything and coming from a legalistic background in church, almost cultish, and coming here. My journey with the Creator has led me here. And so a long time ago, I had to reconcile the dissonance, you know, go through those stages, I guess, of angry of what the colonists did. But I'm part colonist, you know, and also what it happened to my Cherokee side. So I had to reconcile that and seek the truth, which is hopeful. And so that's kind of how I came here. And of course, I know of the atrocities of the ancestors of the Anglican Church, but I also know of the atonement and the reconciliation processes that have happened here.
So if you think about how Kimberly speaks about ancestors and having good ancestors, I think this overlays easily in our language of All Saints and All Souls. We are in that theological language speaking about our ancestors. And so I find it really helpful to think about having good ancestors and being able to become good ancestors. And that would be, to me, a sense of the connection to stewardship, is how do we become the good ancestors that the future church needs? Our ancestors truly are a mixed blessing. As you heard about the residential schools, that is a hard one for us to bear as descendants of those spiritual ancestors. But our ancestors are also the faithful people of St. John's who have gone before us for over 100 years. Some of them would be individuals that you know in the unbroken chain of relationships back to the beginning of this church. Now, they're a mixed blessing too, because they have, with loving care, preserved a building that doesn't necessarily meet all of our needs. It met their needs at the time, but we need some other things to be this church that is fully about truth and reconciliation, that is fully about solidarity. And so for us to talk about being good ancestors for the church that is to be born, to be redirected from where we are now, is going to cost us in our focus, in our priorities, and in our resources as a kind of course correction, a kind of truing up to how do we hand on, which is what ancestors do, how do we hand on this vital Jesus Christ to those who are lost and seeking and hurting from the kinds of challenges of our everyday, from the legacy of residential schools, from all kinds of challenges. How do we hand on something that is life-giving to them? And so we talked about what we're doing now. Maybe you've seen Kimberly offering the smudging at the beginning of each service. Can you tell us again, for those that aren't sure about it, what this is about?
For me, it's about this church is on unceded lands. And I want to keep that in mind. And part of that is a ceremony, smudging, with the four sacred medicines. Reminds me and helps others see. And it's amazing how many indigenous people that don't come to this church, and they say, I'm not ready to come to church yet, but I really do need a smudge. So it's part of that ceremony, because this is unceded territory of Algonquin. And this is indigenous lands that we're on, and we need to be mindful of that. And I know for me personally, it reminds me of that. And it's a very important part of indigenous culture that happens every day. It's not like a special event smudging. Smudging was part of life, part of everyday ceremony and life. In some indigenous cultures, like Cherokee, living your life in that good way, that is all ceremony. Our life living here and even passing on is all ceremony.
So, as an Indigenous person, I know that you've met many, many Indigenous people who have needed to walk apart from the church, but you're here. Can you say something about that?
So why do I stay? Because I have reconciled. It's my truth and reconciliation to know that the Creator, Jesus, I believe in the Creator. The Creator has given my path, and I don't think there's a distinction between the Creator and Jesus Christ. And I can follow the seven grandfather teachings without any dissonance, because to me that's healing and that's inclusion. And that's why I feel that I'm here. And however that looks, and however the Creator and the Spirit and that triune God, how that looks for me, I don't know what the path, but here I am, and I want to be that servant of Jesus Christ, because he was ultimately truth and reconciliation. And I know we have to face our truth and our atrocities, but we don't live there. And that's part of getting to that reconciliation. So I know that Jesus, he came as the Son of God across the cosmos to be Jesus for us. And so that is where I live.
And where you live in this understanding of life and death and all souls, there is room for your journey of figuring that out. There is room for what you believe. The text from the gospel says that Jesus promises that it will be good. And we live into that promise together, that we have a hand in it becoming the good that Jesus intended here intentionally as St. John's. And so thank you for listening to us talk about being good ancestors, and we invite you to continue in that journey with us as good ancestors. Amen.